I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. This week, a defeated European Union scrambles its leaders to gather for an extraordinary summit to double down on the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. Fresh from fawning trips to Washington, France's beleaguered Macron and the UK's Starmer want to violate Russian red lines and send soldiers to die against Russia after any Trump-brokered agreement. An economically suicidal European rump of Eurasia now appears isolated from a USA that votes with Russia and China at the United Nations. Joining me again from Washington, D.C. is Professor Anatol Levin, Director of the Eurasia Programme at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Thank you so much, Professor Levin, for coming back on with things moving so quickly, relatively. Can we just establish, I mean, do you think the Trump administration believes that the Biden proxy war that it inherited on taking office signifies some sort of existential threat to the United States? Trump, again and again in recent days, weeks since he was inaugurated, warning of World War III if a peace cannot be found.
Well, I think that's it. Trump does not regard, and several of his people don't, the Russian threat to Ukraine, which of course does exist, as an existential threat to the United States, unless the United States goes to war with Russia. But then again, of course, President Biden and every European NATO leader said repeatedly that they would not go to war with Russia. So in taking that off the table, Trump has not actually sacrificed anything. The other aspect, of course, is that a great many people in the American establishment and within the Trump administration think that it is really China that is the existential threat to America. Now, that too is greatly exaggerated, but what is quite obviously true is that China is a vastly larger, richer and more powerful state, and therefore rival or potential rival than Russia is. So from a purely realist point of view, it makes excellent sense to try to reduce tension with Russia and concentrate on China. And the Trump administration has basically been, suggesting that this is Trump's Nixon to China moment in reverse, that Trump is going to, in a sense, go to Moscow or meet with Putin and draw Putin away from the Russian relationship with China.
Yeah, I do want to get back to Ukraine, but China very quick, actually, to seemingly be much colder on the plan to reduce nuclear stockpiles by 50%. Do you think anyone in the Trump administration quite understands what's been happening these past few years and that some Nixonian cleaving of Beijing and Moscow just isn't on the cards because of the sanctions that were imposed? I mean, do they understand that that's over?
I think quite a lot of them don't. And there is this very foolish talk of, creating a breach between Russia and China, or turning Russia in some sense into a rival of China. That's not going to happen. At the same time, a lot of Russians are worried about Russia becoming too dependent on China. That is, one of the things that we have to offer to Russia as an incentive to make peace in Ukraine and reduce its demands to Ukraine. The fact that, as long as Western sanctions and European refusal to buy Russian energy remains, China is in a buyer's market as far as Russian energy is concerned, and therefore, has the ability to dictate the price. And, the prices being set by the Chinese are not favorable to Russia. I think there is the chance, while on the other hand, of course, the very close Russian-Chinese relationship does bring a lot of benefits to the Chinese in terms of energy security, military technology, other things. So, there is the ability not to create a breach between Russia and China, but, to create, shall we say, an extra degree of distance between them.
Yeah, the Zoom connection's a bit off to Washington. I don't know whether that's Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency affecting Zoom. What do you think, then, ahead of this European extraordinary summit, of why on earth the Europeans, or an elite group who run Europe at the moment, why they didn't have a plan B in case this kind of administration was ever to take office in the United States, that wanted to make peace, wanted detente of some kind? They don't seem to have any plan B. I mean, you mentioned the energy. Actually, Europe has been buying on the grey market the energy. Probably, who knows, maybe even more than China. We don't know. I mean, the cost of the war on Ukraine, as it were, Britain, France and Germany are paying for the war on Ukraine, arguably, as some analyses have got it.
Well, I think the point is that for many, many decades, from a security and strategy point of view, European countries simply outsourced their brains to Washington, and not to one party or the other, but to the bipartisan U.S. establishment. Now that bipartisan establishment is ceasing to exist.
Wait, Professor Levin, sorry, but you've worked at some of the highest levels, certainly within the scholarly framework in Britain and in Europe, as well as within this bipartisanship. You say that just off the cuff. They've just outsourced their brains to the so-called deep state. I mean, why didn't they read your books? Do they just not like your analysis?
Ask them. Don't ask me. It is very odd. Particularly, I think it doesn't surprise me much in Germany, because all of this comes out, of course, from the Second World War. It doesn't surprise me so much in Britain, because to a great extent, the British establishment has merged with the American one in, of course, a subordinate role. It does somewhat surprise me that the French have done this to such an extent. So, they just were not thinking. They spent, the first Trump administration basically just waiting and praying for the Democrats to come back. They came back. They were so delighted that they subordinated themselves completely to Biden's agenda in Ukraine. Until, months, in some cases, literally weeks before the last election, many of them refused to believe that Trump could be re-elected. They were so frightened of that. Because, of course, they don't want to think seriously about, having to defend themselves, draw up plans for their own security. They're just not used to it. And, I mean, to be fair, of course, two things. I mean, one, as we saw with Starmer's speech in Parliament, this is going to take a lot more money that they don't have. They didn't want to think about that. This is, going to be very, very painful. But the second thing is, of course, that for a whole set of reasons, they've trapped themselves with their rhetoric against Russia, with their, grotesquely overblown language about Russian genocide, Russian threats to Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And, it's easy enough for Trump to reverse that because, he wasn't in power. It will be easy, I think, in a couple of years if we see a Le Pen government in France, for a Le Pen government to reverse it. But it's quite difficult, for governments which have been screaming at the top of their voices, about how Ukraine must win, how we must back Ukraine for as long as it takes, for them, basically to turn on a dime and change that language, which sooner or later they're going to have to do. But it is difficult.
Except if you have an elite that is so out of touch with your own population, all these leaders horribly unpopular, including Starmer, who's only just been elected in Britain, and you have no real education in diplomacy, I don't know, none of the norms of diplomacy built up over hundreds of years in Western Europe are being applied whatsoever, it makes it dangerous for Moscow, doesn't it? Because as the United States may seek its own deals with Russia, how to deal with, I don't know whether MI6 will be there, after any peace agreement. As for the Nazis of the east of Ukraine who don't obey Zelensky, and will be against any thing that Zelensky is forced to sign, how can they be trusted? Because the drones are still there. And frankly, Trump said, you know, only a few days ago, weapons would still be flowing in, just not more so. And but we do know that the new German chancellor, what, he wants to supply Taurus missiles, easy to shoot down, in fairness, but he's expanding the war. Difficult for Moscow.
Well, it is. And, you know, there is so much talk in the West of how we can't trust the Russians, and that's why, you know, Ukraine must have absolute guarantees and so forth. But the point is, of course, that the Russians have at least equally good reason not to trust us, given the number of agreements that the West has broken. But also, of course, you know, as a Russian expert said to me recently, you know, no agreement made with the US can be trusted beyond 4 years because of elections. And, you know, another party comes in and simply tears everything up. But the Ukraine, the Europeans would be insane to, you know, undermine a peace process in Ukraine, because that would infuriate Trump, and it really might leave the Europeans alone.
Well, Trump says they are undermining the Ukraine. Trump says they are undermining the peace agreement, and of course, France and Britain have a UN Security Council veto, so the United States, Russia, and China can't team up and get a resolution to prevent these Western European powers, I call them the European rump of Eurasia, from acting some sort of madman strategy. Do they not realise Russia has the largest number of nuclear weapons and that they would be against policy in Washington, Moscow and Beijing?
I'm not sure that they do, frankly. I have been appalled by the lack of serious strategic thought in Europe. But as I say, they're just not used to it. You know, I mean, the British establishment basically for many years now has been used to getting its orders from Washington. And in a sense, it is still obeying the orders of the last US administration, without, it seems, still fully taking account of the fact that, you know, you have a very different US administration. I mean, my fear is that this is so deeply, I mean, almost kind of genetically embedded in European foreign and security establishments, that they're going to spend the next 4 years basically treading water while praying that the Democrats come back in 2028. But, you know, that is, given the general situation, an extremely stupid policy to follow.
Professor Leven, I'll stop you there. More from the director of the Eurasia program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the director of the Eurasia program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, Professor Anatol Leven. Professor Leven, at the end of part one, you were talking about the possibility of European elites just treading water and waiting for Trump to leave office. Do you think one thing that might concentrate their minds, apart from their own electorates, of course, because there will be elections in Western Europe that arguably may change policy, is if Trump starts to withdraw US bases, say, from Germany, which is now seems to be being discussed in United States circles. He only gave a few minutes, as far as I understand it, to the Polish President Duda when he visited Washington, although the talk is of moving these tens of thousands of American troops to Poland. Do you think that will make these European leaders understand, and of course there are lots of bases in Britain as well, I don't know whether they're going to be moved as well, that will kind of make them realise that arms control, detente, these are the most important issues of our lives, our times right now?
Well, I think, I mean, if Trump moves troops from Germany to Poland, it won't have any effect, because this will actually indicate an increased US commitment to defend Eastern Europe. However, it could well be that the Trump administration will make this proposal in order then to be able to bargain it away with Russia as part of a wider arms limitation agreement, as, you know, part of the whole Ukraine peace process. We'll have to see. The thing is that, I mean, on the one hand, I don't think that there's any chance whatsoever that the Trump administration will leave NATO or will withdraw the main US bases from Europe because, you know, amongst other things, Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany and Naples Naval Base in the Mediterranean are very important to projecting American power in the Middle
Except,
East.
Sorry to interrupt there, except if the talks in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, which we are not privy to, happened to mention that as a overarching security architecture discussion outside of Ukraine and Palestine, do you think? Because the nuclear weapons, I understand, are in Ramstein, right? At targeting Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know there, but I mean, what I'm sure is that you know the Israeli government and the Israeli lobby would have hysterics if they thought that America was actually withdrawing from Europe. And, you know, while Trump is not going to listen much to European governments, he is going to listen, one assumes, to Netanyahu. And then, you know, there is the air bases and intelligence gathering based in Britain. But on the other hand, of course, I mean, so fearful are the Europeans and the Germans and, of course, the Poles and in particular, about any US withdrawal, that it would only take a rather limited US withdrawal or threat of withdrawal, you know, not closing down Ramstein, but you know, withdrawing some US troops, basically to throw a bucket of cold water over them and tell them, look, you better listen when we tell you that, you know, we want a peace settlement with Russia. So I think that could well be the approach of the Trump administration. They are certainly in a mood to send some pretty stern messages to Europe.
Yeah, not that J.D. Vance's message at the Munich Forum and elsewhere about the lack of free speech in Western Europe seemed to do much. I mean, we saw what happened to Romanian police and Ceaușescu, front-runner in Romania's election, which was then referred to again, I think, by J.D. Vance. You don't have shared values if you're jailing people. You don't have shared values if you're cancelling elections because you don't like the result that happened in Romania. But I suppose they'll get the message, these European elites, that they better take the orders just as they took the orders of Blinken and Biden. Otherwise, they're in much bigger trouble than even would have been wielded, power that would have been wielded by Biden and Blinken.
I think so. I mean, if you look at the new German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, look, he worked for BlackRock for most of his career. You know, transatlanticism is you know, baked into his bones. And so I strongly suspect that after all his talk of European independence, in the end, he will defer to Washington. But the other thing, of course, is that, you know, Vance's remarks have been portrayed as America against Europe, you know, and America cutting itself off from Europe. But that isn't Vance's plan at all. What Vance is trying to do is position himself as the leader of a new international conservative movement, you know, including ones like Le Pen in France and you know, AfD in Germany. Now, that's very different from Trump, who genuinely does not give a damn about ideology or Europe or, well, many other things. But this wasn't Vance against Europe. This was Vance siding with this new wing of European politics against the old European liberal centre.
Which anyway is in the ascendance because of the self-sanctioning over the 3 years since 2022. I mean, these are all yesterday's men, in effect. They're incredibly unpopular. They live with hugely divided populations between rich and poor. And then we get a comment like Mette Frederiksen from Denmark saying, kind of, peace is more dangerous than war. I mean, we're talking about them eventually realizing they have to follow Washington's orders, but that isn't what it's been sounding like for the past days since the Munich Security Summit, again and again, except for Macron in Washington looking like a puppy dog. I mean, they keep saying, this is dangerous, Trump is wrong, the Americans are wrong. And what was the Germans talking about? It's not the Americans talking against NATO, it's the Germans seeming to suggest the end of NATO. and going out alone, a pariah continent or Western continent.
But of course, the crazy thing about that is that if you're really unsure of the Americans and future American support, that should be a motive, you know, to end the war in Ukraine and reduce tension with Russia. And, you know, I have reminded some Danish journalists that Russia, no Russian government, as far as I know, in the whole of Russian history, let alone Putin, has ever claimed or threatened a single inch of Danish territory. Not an inch. Whereas, of course, the US administration has just not exactly demanded, but shall we say suggested very strongly that Denmark might hand over 840,000 square miles of Danish territory.
Most of Denmark, in fact.
Well, I mean, it's not really Denmark, but still. But it is very odd. I mean, you know, Western...
It is Denmark. Like, we're not going to allow that Trumpism to... It is Denmark.
It's like Gibraltar is Britain or whatever. No, but, I mean, you know, Western academics like to prattle in a patronising fashion about path dependency of Russia. You know, it's tied to its history, and path dependency of China and wherever. But you could hardly find a more path-dependent lot than the European foreign and security elites at the moment. They've put themselves on a railway track of hostility to Russia, and they seem incapable of getting off it. I mean, they will eventually, but my God, it's taking them a long time.
Presumably it'll take generations. And of course, it's not just the elite. Some polls show that a convincing numbers of population of Western Europe, this rump of Eurasia, do believe all the propaganda and so on, and see Russia as the biggest threat to their existence, not realising that the reason defence expenditure was lower was not because, since 1991, wasn't because the United States were paying for it, or it was because Russia posed no threat to them.
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the crazy things is, I mean, I suppose this is also, this reflects my age, but nobody seems to remember Gorbachev or Gorby mania about him and his idea of a common European home, which everyone was adulatory about. And of course, in his later years, Gorbachev, I mean, he strongly criticized Putin, but he also bitterly condemned the West for betraying that vision, and rightly, I think. But of course, when it comes to European publics, well, what can you expect? Look at Britain. I mean, if the BBC and the Times and the Daily Telegraph and even the Guardian and the magazines are all saying exactly the same thing and are all basically getting their cue from government-funded think tanks, which are unanimous on the same subject, you know, I mean, you can't expect ordinary people to know any better. They are, I mean, that's the thing. We talk about Russian misinformation, but by a different path, of course. But, you know, if you look at Britain today, in a sense, there is no public debate. There is no serious public discussion about British interests, British priorities, international realities, military realities, none of it. Really authoritarian regimes would have to work very, very hard to create the kind of, you know, absolute media and intellectual consensus that you see in Britain now.
In fairness, journalists who have the guts to say the things those elites don't want are detained my country.
They are indeed.
And your country, Britain. And RT is banned, of course, there. Fox News is banned from broadcast effectively. There's an Ofcom agency that prevents viewpoints and presumably some scholars, Press TV from Iran, China. They just don't allow these things. Rumble in France is banned. Do you think we'll ever see a free press again in Western Europe as part of what's been going on in Kiev and Moscow?
Well, I hope so. But of course, the fear is, and I mean, I think you see this in America, that, you know, let's face it, the Democratic Party and its media allies, you know, went in for a, you know, as it turned out, almost totally unbased, you know, campaign of misinformation against Trump as a Russian agent. You know, in the process, of course, all of this has come out now, inventing material or adopting totally, you know, unbased material, and of course, manipulating the US Secret Services. Well, now you see, of course, the Trump administration hitting back, doing the same, you know, the same, but if you like, even worse. I mean, this is my fear, of course, that the present order will collapse, but you will see a new order from, you know, the more radical right in Europe, which will then try to impose its own enforced consensus. Which will be different, but not necessarily better.
Just finally, ahead of Thursday's extraordinary summit, so what, it'll just be a bunch of dazed idiots walking around a room who don't seem to understand the new realities. What does it say about scholars in geopolitics, in international relations, scholarship in international relations, in diplomacy, in these Western European capitals? Will it take a generation to get people to understand that groupthink is the enemy of being a scholar?
Well, I have to say, I mean, for me, this is a deeply depressing, because I was, as you know, a journalist, and I'm appalled by what's happened to Western journalism. And in academic terms, I'm a combination of international relations expert. And as far as I can see, IR as an academic subject has become totally useless. It's contributed nothing of value in policy terms to the formulation of policy. The historians are very good at discussing the immensely complex reasons for the origins of the First World War, and, you know, generally agreeing that they were complex and that all fault or all virtue wasn't on one side or the other, but have withdrawn almost totally from any attempt to suggest that this might have lessons for the present or lessons about, you know, the self-righteousness of the present. And area studies
have largely collapsed. We're out of time. But,
I am in a mood of despair, but maybe I hope that will correct itself.
Professor Anatole Lieven, thank you. That's it for the show. The EU summit on Ukraine is scheduled for Thursday. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.